Whenever you say, I need to do something or I have to do something, you're externalizing the responsibility as if you're under control from some remote foreign source. But every decision you make is yours. Those words, when you hear somebody using them, it's a signal that they're playing a game with themselves and they're saying that they have no choice. But every choice you do have is yours. You can make a decision. So changing your vocabulary is an interesting and fun game to do, but the benefits from it are huge.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hello, hello.
We're excited to bring you a few episodes with Danny Stefanik, and we first met Danny actually in a virtual world, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So welcome to the podcast, Danny.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Danny Stefanik is the CEO of MoodUp. MoodUp is the only virtual meeting and event platform that provides a cross-device 3D environment accessible without a download for event professionals and agencies located around the world needing to provide their attendees a truly immersive and engaging experience and safely allows for collaboration and connections. Danny is also the founder and CEO of LearnBright, a member of Virtual Reality Blockchain Alliance, an investor and advisor to Responsive Voice, ChatMapper, and Three-Digit Life Technology and Research Companies. Danny completed a double major in computer science and software engineering at Swinburne University, and later developed the technology for the world's first panoramic viewer for the web, which was later licensed by the U.S. technology multinational IPIX. Today, Danny joins us to discuss his latest work with 3D environments, virtual worlds, and the future of learning. Oh my. We're going to kick it off today with some just for fun questions. So we thought it would be appropriate to ask you, what is your favorite virtual reality, or I guess we could just stick with video game?
Wow, that's a tough question. I've been playing computer games since, I owned my first Atari and Commodore 64 way back in the day. So that's a long journey.
We should have done top 10.
I think what I'll share is the game that I'm playing right now. I don't get much time to play because I'm building a business that's in virtual reality, so I get to indulge every day in that. But when I'm winding down, I play Horizon Zero Dawn at the moment, and I'm finding that an incredible world to explore.
As you were working on your Atari and Commodore and forward, was there a point at which you thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could be inside the game?
Yeah, that's been one of my earliest recollections. So, yeah, it's been something that's been on my mind for a long time. And that's what launched me to start way back in 1994, the Virtual Reality Association in Australia. Amazing. So, really empowered to make these things happen.
Now, another follow-up question I have is, in any of your virtual reality experiences, do you play video games? Like from within the virtual reality world?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I can talk about it a bit later on maybe, but we did have a virtual world where we had a bunch of arcade machines, all of them running classic games. So you would be inside the game playing another game.
That's awesome. So,
it was hard to get staff to really work on the work.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, is there a book that you can point to that was influential in your life?
Well, I've got a huge pile of books that I've read or rereading and lots of new ones coming out. Right now, I'm listening on Audible to one called You Are Not So Smart. I'm finding that incredibly interesting. I'm into human psychology and how that applies. It overlaps a lot with virtual reality. But another one that I really, really liked was Predictably Irrational by Dan Ehrlich. Again, it challenges your ways of thinking and the way that we as humans do lots of things that are not very rational at all. And probably another great one is The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. It covers a bunch of different neurological conditions and how they play out that taught us a lot about the way our mind works. But right now, that I'm into science fiction big time, which you'd expect. But I'm reading the Bobbyverse series, which I recommend to any engineer or tech person. Bobbyverse is an incredible ride into AI and exploring the universe.
Huh.
Yeah.
Excellent.
What about the worst advice that you ever received?
You know, you always try and find something out of any advice you get. Even bad advice can give you, you know, to look in the opposite direction. But I think I have a gem, the absolute worst advice I was ever given. I was at university enthralled and passionate about virtual reality. And I thought to myself, it must be possible to get a virtual reality headset that sits really close to your eyes, that we don't need to go through the focal point to deliver a display to the human eyes. So I went to a physics professor at our university. I arranged a special meeting, went to his office, I remember sitting opposite his desk and discussing the concept of near-eye displays for virtual reality and augmented reality. And he categorically told me, it's physically impossible to do. And I left considering that person to be a, you know, a guru, someone who knew what they were saying, and I believed them.
Oh.
And that was the worst advice ever given to me, because I would have pursued near-eye displays from that day on. But I took someone to be an authority, and now I don't. I go searching myself. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a gem in there.
So do you think there's a tendency for people who we would look to as authorities to begin to limit their vision based upon all the knowledge they have?
I think it's an interesting quandary. This is why I mentioned that book, You Are Not So Smart. It covers things, the fallacies where we apply, because somebody wears a lab coat or talks authoritatively, we start to believe them. And there's lots of experiments around this. It's incredible how influenced we can be, even to the point of, you know, thinking you're electrically shocking somebody else in an experiment and going way above what you should because somebody in a lab coat told you to. These things really are limitations in us as human beings, the way our psychology works. It's served us for millions of years for other reasons. Now that we're applying it here, we kind of get misdirected. So it's an interesting topic. You know, as I said, even the worst advice can be an interesting story here. So you learn something.
So on the flip side, my guess is you also have sometime in your life or many times in your life received great advice. Can you point to one of those?
Oh, yeah. Look, just anything you look at, read, absorb, you're going to pick gems out of it that you can apply, you know, weave into your life or apply to your character. Two things come to mind. One is adjusting your vocabulary. So we have a whole bunch of words at our disposal, and we can swear and cuss, and we can say other things that are actually way more damaging than swearing. And I made a conscious effort to remove from my vocabulary a number of words. And these words disempower you and change your perspective on reality. So two things that are worth considering removing are words like need and have to. Whenever you say, I need to do something or I have to do something, you're externalizing the responsibility as if you're under control from some remote foreign source. But every decision you make is yours. Those words, when you hear somebody using them, it's a signal that they're playing a game with themselves. And they're saying that they have no choice, but every choice you do have is yours. You can make a decision. So changing your vocabulary is an interesting and fun game to do, but the benefits from it are huge.
Wow.
And the other thing that pops into my mind is something I did wrong for many, many years. And that is my employees would come to me with ideas. They'd come to me with, I've got this great idea to put video games in arcade machines within the 3D virtual world. Say, that's a great idea. And can we also, let's say, put advertising in there so we can make some revenue out of it? What I was doing was taking somebody's idea, putting my 2 cents worth of, you know, just a small amount of extra value on it and giving it back to them. But what I'd done is taken their idea, made it mine, and then given it back to them and ripped out all of their passion and ownership around doing that particular task. I didn't realize it, but I was stripping away somebody that was 150% passionate about doing this task. I take it, add, you know, 2% extra value, give it back to them, and now they've got a task that's at 60% value to them. And so instead, I'd wait till somebody's finished something, then we'd review it, and then we'd see what could be added. But I was always looking to add extra value way too early. And I was undermining people's real passion about what they'd come to me with, their idea that they owned. So that for me, when I changed that behavior, for me, changed incredibly the way I work with people and their outcomes.
That is a great point.
Yeah. Very powerful insight. Could you talk to us about two or three of your favorite projects that you've worked on in your career?
I really like challenges. So both on a technological level and when it comes to psychology and behavior as well. So, you know, I really like pushing boundaries. So most of the projects that I've done are always trying to take technology where it isn't built to go. And probably some of the most interesting projects I've worked on, and there's been a lot of firsts. We built the first 360-degree panoramic viewer for the internet, first 3D shopping solution for the internet, one of the first ad blockers for the internet, which is not even on my profile. One of the most interesting was a race to build the first multi-user 3D worlds with the earliest browsers. I'm talking about Netscape. So a couple of companies and myself were racing to get these 3D multi-user worlds running without any technology to download or install way back then. And we made it possible. And that was pretty fun because it really making browsers do things that they weren't built to do. Mm. And that's always been something that I've been following. And then back in 2000, just after the internet bubble burst, I started a new company called Exit Reality, which was to build the metaverse, that is, convert all the web pages on the internet using an algorithm into 3D spaces. So you take all the pictures, the colors, the format of the web page, and procedurally create a space out of it, an architecture. And then all the links on those pages could link to other web pages, effectively creating a 3D internet dynamically and in real time and allowing people to meet in those websites. So we worked with companies like MySpace and other big players at the time and created apartments out of everyone's profile pages where you could interact and meet people. It was a ton of fun, but the business model for it was based on advertising revenue, and it took us about 8 years to build something that could scale to the size of the internet. We definitely overinvested in the amount of technology and amount of users we expected as well. And we got huge spikes at the beginning, but our engagement was a little off, and we were relying on advertising revenue and innovation spend, which kind of dried up around the time of the GFC or global financial crisis in 2008, which we launched in. But it was a hell of a journey and an amazing experience. I'm proud to say that our team built the first real metaverse on the internet. And now we're seeing with the rebirth of VR, that sort of concepts are going to come into fruition again. So, I think we're on the cusp of the next version of the metaverse coming up. Yeah.
Next wave.
Yeah.
So one of your ventures is Moot Up. And I think this has tremendous implications for higher ed. Tell us a little bit about Moot Up and what we might do with it.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a blossoming that comes out of earlier journeys with technology. And we're at a point now where 3D is as accessible in browsers as video is. Way back, video used to be difficult. You needed different codecs and different mechanisms to play video. You couldn't rely on everyone being able to consume it. But nowadays, you just go, hey, here's a video, share it with anyone, they can watch it. Same's happening with 3D right now. All the browsers support 3D. So you can actually have 3D worlds pop into a browser without any downloads or installing anything, which is incredibly accessible. And add that to the conferencing capabilities that are in browsers, and you've got a magic solution for getting people together in 3D environments. So Moot Up is an authoring tool to create these 3D environments, but also to jump in with your colleagues and have virtual meetings, virtual collaboration with video, text, avatars, do your screen shares, everything you would do on Zoom in the 3D environment as well. But you have a real sense of being together, and you can leave the room exactly how you left it, drop your documents in or 3D items, and it becomes your space. So this is a nice, especially under current circumstances, the global pandemic, it's great to have a space that is shared and not with everyone separated. This brings us together and allows us to have shared experiences, which create bonds, but also it's practical and really useful at the same time. Mm-hmm. So in education, you can see, especially for remote learning, getting people together in work sessions, learning by doing is possible in these environments instead of staring at a video screen, which is less than engaging because a person is just looking at other people's faces. You're not really interacting and doing things together. So that's what Moodup's all about. And it's got a ton of traction. It's being used in, you know, high schools, higher ed, universities. It's being used in enterprise as well across all sectors, from healthcare to finance and social areas as well. So yeah, it's pretty exciting to be involved in it.
It sounds just from hearing your voice, your passion about everything that you do, the projects that you work on, you get excited about them. And that's what kind of seems to drive you toward creating these new options.
Yeah, definitely excited. But part of that comes from wanting to see the future sooner, right? Wanting to pull the future forward. Yeah.
We've had an awesome opportunity to speak with Danny Stefanik today, and we're excited because we get to bring him back for part two. Be with us next week, and we'll have another opportunity to hear from Danny.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.